This is the Future Focus Terminal Podcast, where we talk about challenges operators face and how experts combine human ingenuity, experience, and innovative tech and deliver unprecedented solutions that lead the way. Hello, and welcome back to the Future Focus Terminal Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Fairchild. Today, we're going to celebrate Women's History Month, and to do that, I've invited four women that have truly inspired me to talk about empowering women in logistics. So I'm going to introduce them now. With me, I have Ashley Ritteman and Megan Marsden from Valor Victoria, Christy Knischel from Knischel Logistics, and Bonnie Michael from UPS. Welcome, ladies.
Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right. Before we get started today, I'm going to have you go ahead and introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about yourselves. Ashley, you want to go ahead and get started?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity, Shauna. It's an honor to be here and to work with Con Global. My name is Ashley Ritteman, and Megan and I co-founded Valor Victoria just over 7 years ago in 2016. We are a family-owned business and 100% remote, so I get the benefit and pleasure of being equal parts mom and CEO on a daily basis. My husband and I live in North Dakota, and in our spare time, we are operating a first-generation grain farm. So that's a little bit about us.
Thank you so much. How about you, Megan?
Hey, I'm Megan Marsden, Chief Operating Officer and co-founder of Valor Victoria. As Ashley articulated, we got to start the company together in 2016 and had the opportunity to partner and develop a special organization. I live in Denver, Colorado with my husband, Aaron, and our nine-month-old, Elijah. We spend a lot of time in the mountains of Colorado and are pretty adventurous in and around the world. So that's a little bit about us.
So for our listeners, you could probably tell, but part of what has inspired me about Ashley and Megan is really the balance that they've brought into the logistics business. So that's part of why I've invited them to join me today. Christy, how about you?
Well, thanks for having me today. Christy Knischel. I am the CEO, President of Knischel Logistics. I am a second generation family business owner, took over the business in 2007. Been in this business for 26 years. I have a son that's 13. He just turned 13 this past week. So I would love to get Megan and Ashley's balance with the family and running the business. I'm still working on that. But I love camping, love going to concerts, and my Steeler games, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And Christy is a power to be reckoned with. So you'll learn a lot more about that as we go along. And Bonnie, how about you?
Well, thanks for having me. I feel like I'm in the shadow of greatness here, and it's an honor to be with all of you all today. I started at UPS when I was in college as an 18-year-old over 37 years ago, working in the night operations. I've had over 19 different roles at UPS. It's really been a great ride. You know, when I think about it, I've been able to travel the world in various air planning roles. I've supported every business unit out there that we've got, air, ground, international small package, our freight forwarding, our LTL freight units before we sold them, logistics and distribution. And I'm currently in charge of the long-haul middle-mile U.S. transportation network, including all of our railroad relationships, our carriers, our Penske fleet, and the support of our Brown sleeper teams. On the side, I've been married for 36 years now. Chris, my husband, we have two kids. The oldest is a freshman in college, and the youngest is a sophomore in high school. They are very different people. Couple of degrees from U of L, and in my spare time, besides spending time with them, I like to hike, play golf, and go skiing.
Thank you, Bonnie. Mm-hmm. And it's actually Bonnie's time at UPS and working her way through all those different channels that, again, has inspired me. But I remember some stories that she shared about her time as a night manager. I won't steal any thunder in case she wants to share them on her own, either on this podcast or in personal conversations with any of our listeners later. But she's told me some things about that time that I was just like, wow, to still be in logistics after some of those stories. So thank you for joining me, ladies.
Thank you.
All right. So we're going to dive right in. I'm going to have each of you start with different questions, but I'm going to make sure that you each get chances to answer them. Let's go ahead and start with Megan. What does the phrase empowered women, empower women mean to you, and how do you live it daily?
Yeah, so to me it means if you are in a position of authority, offering opportunities to grow for individuals who have exhibited excellence. So I also think it means acting as a servant leader, so prioritizing growth and the well-being of others as you lead. I think that's a huge thing. I was given an opportunity to stretch beyond my experience when I was excelling at my current role, and it really gave me exposure to areas of business that I maybe would have never gotten otherwise. And so I am a more well-rounded businesswoman because of those experiences. And so for me, I live it daily by offering those same opportunities to those around me that have exhibited excellence.
Bonnie, do you want to add a little color to that from your own perspective?
You know, that's a pretty great answer. You know, the thing that I would think about is being in a very large organization, a global organization like UPS, I think what it really means to me is not only do you not ascend to higher levels without somebody helping you, right, along the way, we've got to make sure that we're not only advocating for the women out there that are capable of it, but also making sure that the influential men are very well aware about the qualified women, what their superpowers are, and advocate for the women just as much as the women do.
Yep, that's true. Thank you. Christy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say supporting and uplifting women, that's a big initiative that I have here at Knishel. When I started 26 years ago, I was the only woman in a room of 60 to 100 men at a railroad event, just specifically, to be quite honest. I still am sometimes. Maybe there's more from the rail side, but there's not as many, there wasn't as many women back then. So, you know, again, just that mission of, you know, working with women, sharing my knowledge, sharing my experiences, encouraging them and supporting them and making sure that they have mentorship all around. And I do a lot of podcasts and speaking events just talking about this specifically because it has been a challenge. So I think it's really important. And honestly, my business has 70% of our staff are women. And I'm very proud of that because I think because of what I've done, it draws women to want to work for me. But I also think, to Bonnie's point, it's important to encourage men to uplift women as well. This newest podcast I'm on actually is with a male, and it's Jeff Dickinson. And it is talking about, we're having men on there talking about this because it has to be everyone involved. So it's important.
Definitely. Those are really great points. Ashley?
Yeah, I think mine's going to follow the theme of Bonnie and Christy. As entrepreneurs in this industry, we've had a lot to overcome. And that's not just unique to our gender. I think that's just unique to the lifestyle of being an entrepreneur. And in a lot of ways, all of us are entrepreneurs in this industry. And so it's just a daily choice of playing the long game and having extreme ownership and honesty and transparency as a choice you make every day and modeling that for other people.
I couldn't agree more. I don't have anything to add. You guys all gave some really great perspectives there. So let's go on to the next question. Bonnie, why did you choose a career in logistics?
So I'm not sure that I did choose a career in logistics. I think it's one of those things that chose me. You know, when I think about my early time at UPS, I was just happy to be my first week at UPS. I lost 5 pounds and I got paid, and it was part-time, and I thought it was the best thing ever because my paycheck was larger than my full-time job. But I was just trying to put myself through school, you know, and, you know, one thing leads to another. And when you're having a good time, I think you realize somewhere along the way that even though you have, like, I was pre-med and I have a degree in biology, and I thought I wanted to help people, you know, in the medical field. But then I got to realize I didn't really like blood that much. And, you know, the things that I was good at was what I was doing where I was. Right. So I think along the way, you make choices, and then you start to open doors, and doors are open for you. And I think for me, part of that thing was I really enjoyed feeling the impact of making small changes, you know, in business, and seeing the impact of that as an individual contributor early in my career. And then later on as a manager, as a people developer, that's what I really fell in love with, right? And then being able, even as an executive, to either sponsor women's leadership development programs or promote women to levels that were at my level or even higher, and to see them all across the globe and across the organization is just amazing, because I've got friends, you know, in Singapore or in South America or you name it, right? Anywhere in the U.S., that those ladies were not where they used to be. You know, now, and, you know, as you grow over the period of a career, you realize what a better place to do this than in transportation, because like others, like, you know, Christy, you mentioned being the only woman in the room or being very few. Early in my career, I was the only woman in a very smoke-filled room. Transportation executives were all wearing suits, smoking cigars, and I was not the one doing that, right? You know, so it's changed a lot, but for the better, in my view. So I think it's been a great place for me.
So I think you probably saw me nodding all along, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to hear the other perspectives, but, you know, I got into logistics also by what I would say is accident. And, you know, I've talked about it on a couple of other podcasts, but I agree with you that, you know, as you get into it and you, you know, found your way, many of those same things that you outlined there, I would find to be similar experiences that you found that even though you thought you could be impactful somewhere else, then you got into the logistics space a little bit by accident and found just how much of an impact you could make. And I think, I don't know, I share that similar experience to you. I'd be interested. Ashley, is that similar for you, or how did you get into logistics?
Yeah. And Bonnie stole my first sentence. Logistics. I think logistics chose me. I mean, there isn't a ton of awareness, or there wasn't, I think, when I was going through formal education of logistics as a career path. I think now it is offered more in universities and sought out as a career. But for me, I was in graduate school and working with my home state exporters in North Dakota. And I noticed that there was a problem that prohibited trade activity, both import and export in my home state, on the basis of access to rail outlets specific for international intermodal. And as I researched, I realized that this problem isn't just specific to North Dakota. It's actually true of all rural America. And so I just really fell in love with the industry and the passion behind solving this problem, and haven't really looked back since.
How about Megan, Christy? You two want to weigh in here as well?
Go ahead,
Megan.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I mean, similar story, right? Didn't anticipate or select supply chain and logistics. It wasn't even a major at my university, and was in business development and got into logistics and distribution and final mile. And then I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the creativity and problem solving. Like, there was so many variables and few constants, and it was ever changing. And for me, I really like that environment. And I like the ability to be curious and creative and shape things. And logistics really is that. I think some people think it's very rigid, when actually it's very malleable. And so I think that's why I fell in love with it. And then from an entrepreneur perspective, I have been entrepreneurial most of my life and had opportunities to be a part of other ventures. And when the opportunity to work alongside Ashley came, and it was entrepreneurship plus curiosity, creativity, many variables, problem solving, it was like all aspects of what I love and enjoy were coming together. And so I think just this ability to constantly create and be curious and challenge, and the dynamics are ever changing every day, that it just makes it a very interesting field.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's one of those things people don't realize about logistics is the fact that you're learning, and no 2 days look the same, right? I think people, to your point, probably think it's rigid, that, you know, getting to point A, you know, from a point A to point B can't really be that difficult. But once you get into the space, you realize, again, it is all problem solving. It is very dynamic. You always get a chance to learn, and every day is completely different than the day before. So I think that's great. Christy?
Yeah, for me, my journey started initially going to school for criminology and then fashion marketing. And then I wanted to buy a pizza shop. And then my dad talked me into working for him. So, but no, I mean, honestly, it was an awesome opportunity. And, you know, same as all you ladies mentioned, you know, just the problem solving, being able to solve that problem for a customer or get the pricing negotiated down more than what, you know, you thought you could do. And to me, that was just, I wanted to do it all and just, you know, continue to push on that. And, you know, what could I do to make a difference for the customer or the carrier on both sides? So for me, yeah, I mean, I came in 26 years ago, I was 19, and I'm still here. So.
Awesome. So let's build on the question a little bit. And maybe we've answered it already, but Ashley, when you think about women specifically, why is a career in logistics a good career for women?
I think women are just great problem solvers. For anybody who is married, you know, when men and women think very differently. And I think for a long time, the female perspective was missing from logistics. And so I think that's been really exciting as an opportunity for me coming in. I think also women are just great communicators. And one of the things that I've found in the industry, at times I've seen value just in being able to transmit information across silos in the industry. And it seems so simple, but that really is a value that can be added and a role that women play really well.
I agree with that. And I'm going to take the question, you know, so let's keep building on that, Christy, with the, in addition to why is it good for women in logistics, are there specific leadership qualities in addition to those that Ashley just mentioned that make, you know, females great leaders in the logistics space?
Yeah, I mean, I think for myself, they bring empathy to the table. And I think in a business in general, you need to have that where you might not get that as much from the male side of things. And women, I think, are multitaskers a lot better than most men. I've seen it. We have different divisions, but in our intermodal division specifically, most men do not, I don't want to say do not work out, but like most of them have not been able to survive in that department specifically. So it's kind of interesting to watch that, even though we have the truckload and whatnot. But like that one, I feel is a lot more multitask oriented, where women seem to just be able to pick that up and go with it. Because I feel like we were born to, you know, be mothers and all these different things that we handle, where I think men sometimes can't handle all of those. I think, you know, women are also probably, in my opinion, for the most part, better at financial planning and being able to adapt, I think, in situations in different ways. But I would say my top one, though, really is empathy. I think that's the biggest one that most companies miss, especially in the male leadership roles, and why women can really excel in this field.
Moni, do you want to add anything to either of those points on the women in logistics or women as leaders in logistics?
Yeah, I think the best women leaders, you know, that I look up to always have high levels of emotional intelligence, you know, and they're able to not only be self-aware and manage themselves, right? How do I want to show up? What kind of energy level do I want to bring to the room? And then that understanding of how do I, what's a social awareness, right? What, how do I affect others in certain situations, and how are my social skills really implemented out there? And I think that if you're able to take that high level of emotional intelligence and master that delicate balance between warmth and competency, that's where you really are able to get you know, the confidence of your team, and you can still remain true and authentic to your values, right? But I think that if you're not seen somehow as some level of warmth and competent, you don't ever gain that confidence level out there. And I think the best female leaders really have those high levels of EQ, I'm going to say.
Well, and I think it ties some of the points back together too that have already been made, which is Megan, I think, had at the outset talked about servant leadership a little bit, which ties in the piece that Christy talked about as well, and even some of the stuff that Ashley's talked about in terms of breaking down silos. But I think if you kind of put that all together, some of what's really important, I think, in the logistics space is building that community and being able to influence. And yeah. I think that is what women tend to be really, really good at is, again, you have to have all these different parties that are working together because there are so many different moving parts in transportation and supply chain that you need to get a lot of people pulling on that same end of the rope. And it takes all of those different pieces and almost that servant leader aspect to do that, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So, Megan, as leaders in the industry, why is diversity even important? And a fast follow-up on that, what steps can organizations take to create a more inclusive and supportive environment?
Yeah, so from my perspective, the diversity of thought, I think about a lot, right? So from our organization, we hire people who are inside and outside of the industry. And I think it really has driven unique solutions because of this different vantage point that these people sit in. and how you practically execute on that outside of hiring these unique perspectives that maybe have different experiences that they can bring to the table to drive those unique solutions, is bringing people who are maybe untraditionally in a meeting to the meeting, right? So bringing someone from technology to a customer meeting, they may have a totally different lens that they look through that drive to unique solutions. And we believe everyone on our team is innovators, and there is a place for innovation at all aspects and all levels in the organization. And so practically, by bringing these individuals in access to different opportunities, not only are they growing in their careers, but you're driving diversity of thought for your customers, for your vendors, for yourself, for your organization. And for us, that diversity of thought is really, really valuable.
I agree with all of that, and that's very aligned with how Con Global approaches the world. Ashley, how about you?
Megan is way too much like me. She stole all my answers. But,
She stole all her answers.
I will say that I disagree with what Megan said. Diversity of thought is something we consider a lot at Valor Victoria. And I would say we actually have a habit of hiring outside of the industry. And we specifically really like soldiers, first responders, and teachers, because as a logistics company, we say that it's our mission to bring order where there is chaos in the supply chain. And these type of individuals generally have a bent of navigating chaos and bringing order. And that's really what we aim to do as a company. And so when we have that unique skill set of, you know, that background coming in, we can train the aspects of logistics, and oftentimes we end up getting a fresh set of eyes on a problem of asking the question, why does the industry work this way? Like, and the, because it always has, is not a valid answer anymore. So it's been a really rewarding mission, I would say, of having our team come alongside of us and look through the lens of how do you align and create order in every aspect of the supply chain.
I love it. Love it. Solving chaos. All right. So Christy, this next one's for you, because I see you doing this all the time and really effectively out in the world. So how do you see the role of mentorship in supporting women's career growth? And how have mentors even helped you in your career?
So I'm going to answer the second question first. I didn't really have mentors within my career. I mean, a little bit my dad growing up, but honestly, like, I didn't even think about that, didn't even know that back then. That did come like a lot longer in my career, where I think it was extremely important to learn from people who have done it before. The unfortunate part, maybe it's actually a good thing, but I learned the hard way, I feel like, through everything, by making a ton of mistakes. So going into the first question, this is why I feel it's so important for mentorship, because I feel like I can help others prevent them making mistakes that I have made, and then just supporting them. And then I will say the other part of that, I think that's so important for me and who I work with and mentor, is just we learn from each other. It's not even about just me then mentoring that person and working with them, because I do work with men and women, mostly women, but I also learn a lot from those people as well. And then you become friends, and then you share more, and you just continue to build that circle, that network that you need. So, I mean, again, I'm talking to companies that are $1 billion in size CEOs, and I'm able to just call them and ask them questions now. And then again, they're asking me stuff too. And it's a two-way street. And I think it's so important to learn, because we learned a lot, like, for making the mistakes, like I mentioned, but I wish I would have had less mistakes if I had a mentor early on in my career. And I mean, that would be the one piece of advice I'd give anyone listening to this, is really like build that out for yourself and have a couple mentors in your circle, because it's so important. I speak about it all the time, multiple podcasts, as I mentioned earlier, just pushing this out there. And I think there's so many women that are reaching out to me, like appreciating that, because I feel like they don't have the confidence to reach out. And I had that issue myself. And obviously, you know, it's a lot better now than what it was before. But I think that will help everyone within their career continue to grow.
I think that's a really great point. And, you know, to let people know it is okay to ask for mentorship, and that there's an openness for people to do that, and that it's okay to, again, you know, whether it's vulnerability or right. Or not, or I think that's it, is that I think a lot of people, especially women in this space, feel like they have to feel and look strong all the time, or like they know everything, because you're already coming from this place where, again, you're in a room full of men where you're trying to stand out. So I think that's a really powerful thing to say, Christy, is like, hey, it's okay. It's okay to ask for a mentor. You know, probably some people need to hear that. So.
Yeah. And you made a good point, though, because honestly, that was one of my issues. I felt like I did need to know it all. They're going to think I'm stupid because I should know this. Like, I even talked in another podcast, and it sounds crazy, but I Googled, what does a CEO do? I mean, this was a long time ago. But again, it's like, I didn't know. And then I felt like, how do I find this out? You know, I didn't want to ask anyone, like, what should I be doing? Because no one told me. So it's kind of interesting how that's worked. But yeah, you don't have to know it all. There's people out there to help you get there.
Yep. And people that want to. So,
yeah.
Now, Bonnie, Ashley, or Megan, do you want to add to the mentorship conversation?
I think Christy's.
I was just going to say, I actually had great mentors. I did early on put myself in a vulnerable spot to ask for mentorship. And it's just a fast-paced industry, and there's a really steep learning curve, one of which I feel like I'm still on. But in the space that we operate in, there's just straight crazy that comes at you in your day sometimes, and you need a sounding board to help understand how you respond to certain situations that you were never told in school would be part of adult life. So now Megan and I are largely a sounding board for each other. And so I would also just say mentorship can look in many forms. I think having somebody alongside the journey with you that is able to process information and also just sharpen each other is really powerful.
Yeah, I think having that group of trusted peers is useful. And I also had really wonderful mentors and bosses in my career. And what they just practically did is just brought me into conversations to observe at first and then participate and then lead. And so I think the observe, participate, lead practical strategy for a leader from a mentor perspective, and just I think we don't feel like we're ready until we know everything, when really you need to observe, you need to participate, and then you can lead. And at some point, no one was ready for it. So the observing part is key, just to see how others are operating and what that looks like. In strategy sessions, maybe if you're in a coordinator role and you're not in a strategic place yet as a leader, getting that exposure to what that looks like through example is huge. And then giving the opportunity to actually lead those type of meetings prepares you for other places in your career to go up. So I was fortunate that I had that model modeled for me in my career.
Yeah, that's a really great model. I like it. The one thing for me, mentors, I think, you know, you can have them in your direct line of sight, and then you can kind of have them out in another function that is not in your direct line of sight, right? And both are good because both are there for different reasons. But I think at the end of the day, the mentors can help you see something in you that you might not be able to see at that moment in time, right? And it could be anything from just something you need to be aware of. I had one of my mentors one time look at me and said, you know, you wear your heart on your sleeve. And I was shocked. What do you mean? Is that bad? That's not bad. Like, I'm not, you know, out of line here. I'm just passionate, right? But he's like, well, yeah, you know, some people can see it that way and some people don't, you know, and pointing those things out in a safe environment, that's the beauty of having mentors.
And I like the point that you made about the having one within your subject area of expertise and even one without, because having somebody outside your area of expertise can give you a totally different perspective, because sometimes the people that are within your direct area of expertise or your department can sometimes be right down there in the weeds with you and may not be able to give you kind of that outsider's perspective. So I think that's really great advice, Bonnie.
Yeah, and I want to point out too, I literally just started a CEO mentoring with a company, me and my COO, with a company that is other CEOs that are totally outside of our industry. And for that exact reason you just said, and we have access to like 400 other ones, but like we're working one-on-one with them. And I'm like so excited because so many things have already come from it just in like 3 weeks. So it's super exciting.
That's fantastic.
That sounds like the Chief Network.
Yeah, it's Pinnacle Global Network.
All right. Good deal.
All right, Bonnie, next one's for you. So how do you approach leadership in a male-dominated industry, and what strategies have you found effective in gaining respect and influence?
Yeah, so this is a tough one. This is like the school of hard knocks of growing up in transportation, isn't it?
It is.
The main thing I'll say is I found there's really no shortcuts, right? You've got to put the work in, and at the end of the day, you earn respect of everyone around you with results. And you also have to probably carefully craft how you magnify that with an appropriate recognition that doesn't look like you're tooting your own horn. And there's some strategies that you can use for that, and I've used it in different ways over the years where maybe it's just a simple thing like an end of the year type of reflection where you actually, if you're smart about it, you can put together a PowerPoint deck if you want throughout the year, you know, once a quarter or so. You put a couple slides in about what your team has accomplished and how it's important to our customers, connect it to what that value proposition is, you know, whether or just straight up quantified benefits, right, that your team has given back to the organization in terms of profitability or savings or any number of things. And then sit down and go through that, you know, at appropriate times, because what it does is it cements, especially with your boss, if you can find that, you know, undivided time, it cements what your role is and what value you add and why it's so important that you're, you know, continue to get the resources and things like that to do more of that. I think the other thing is if you think about the male-dominated industry, you've got to know your audience. You've got to know what their perspective is, and you've got to know what their preferred leadership styles are. Because you can't just have one tool in your leadership bag. You can't come in all the time, you know, with a certain style. It rubs certain people wrong. And to know that ahead of time is really important. You know, if you got this typical male type A personality sitting in a senior executive role somewhere, and you've got to go in and have a conversation with them, well, you don't want to go in and talk through a problem because he's a guy who makes decisions, right? I mean, so you got to approach that one a little bit differently and manage it differently. And I find that having various tools and various approaches with different people is more effective than just one size fits all.
Yep, that is a very good perspective and good point. You cannot approach every situation or every person the same. Not likely to work out well. Christine, you want to weigh in on that question as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say Bonnie hit it head on. A lot of the same stuff I would say too. I think, you know, first of all, I worked in my own company or, you know, for my dad initially before it became mine, but like I worked in every position within the company. And I mean, every position I put, you know, the gloves on and I did all the work, you know, so them seeing that and knowing what I have put into that, I think is definitely key for sure. I think for me too, it's also being authentic. I've also been able to build really strong relationships with the other men and leaders in the supply chain. And I think having effective communication with them, because I think, you know, not just with them, but, you know, everyone in general. But I think if you can really learn about how they are, and you know, like Bonnie mentioned, type A, like it's crucial. We look at that stuff here because you cannot treat everybody the same, and I think it is how you present yourself, how you come across. Don't come across too strong. I think there's times for that, but then there's times it's going to potentially harm you as well. So I really think paying attention to those key things are important for sure.
Okay, very good. Ashley, Megan, do you want to weigh on this one? I know we're almost out of time, so I've got one more signature question before we wrap up, but I'll let you guys, if you want to weigh in on this one first.
Yeah, I think I can speak for both Megan and I. Our focus is just on adding value, and as we continually strive to add value, influence follows, and so we just make that our only focus.
All right, very good. Okay, so my signature question, and we'll have Ashley start, is what does future-focused terminal mean to you?
Ooh, this is exciting. I'm passionate about this question. So actually, I'm going to have Megan tag team me on answering this because we have like three different parts to the answer. I think the first answer, just in how we look at the lens of the supply chain. We're very passionate about landing trains closer to their door. We're very bullish on the North American rail connecting Mexico to Canada and back. We think it's good for the environment, it's good for economics, and it's good for America's GDP. And Megan can expound on that.
Yeah, so as Ashley articulated, we're really passionate about international assets being accessible to companies and individuals that produce or manufacture or have commodities that would typically be absorbed into the domestic market at less value. And so for us, from a macro perspective, we get pretty pumped up about the impacts of the United States GDP through the increase of value of products and commodities and the value of export goods out of the United States. And that you might have heard that from Ashley and her origin story. It's part of the origin of our company and just something we're really passionate about.
Right. We also think that the future of terminals includes absolutely eliminating accessorials. Yeah. We're at Valley Victoria, we're very proud that we have not experienced rail storage or port per diem with any Valley Victoria customer in just about 2 years now. And you know, it's crazy how much inefficiency was in the supply chain that led to accessorials, which has had a direct impact on inflation for the American family.
Yeah, the excess and unplanned expenses that impact the financials of companies. Like we're very passionate about driving that order into the financials of organizations because it's very possible. And this impacts those companies' ability to invest right in their workers and their technology and their communities. It impacts the inflation of the consumer spending. So we're all buying less with the same amount of money. This impacts families as families and for a family business, women who have children, right? This is impacting people around the nation and the ability to buy necessities for their family. And so we're deeply committed to driving out those inefficiencies in accessorials because it is just an unplanned expense that is plaguing companies right now.
That's right. Go ahead, Ashley.
Oh no, go ahead, Shauna. I have one more point on.
No, go for it. Make your point.
Like I said, it's what I'm excited about. Okay. Lastly, we at Valley Victoria have an initiative to combat human trafficking, and we think that there's actually really interesting and unique things that can be done at the terminal level. Much of the activity around human trafficking is actually happening in warehousing, and that's purposely zoned so that the public is not being privy to it. But our containers that we all operate go into those very dark places. And so how do we be a light and bring resources and tools into an otherwise hopeless place? And then actually going after what type of physical operations or safety measures can occur at a terminal. When freight is crossing the border from Mexico, you are seeing containers come through x-ray scans. And when a container enters a U.S. port, there's an x-ray scan. But when a container stops at a warehouse on a border town and then comes north to a town like Chicago, there's no more x-ray scans. So how do we know that that container isn't being leveraged for the transportation of victims of human trafficking? And so we have stood up an initiative at Valley Victoria that we call Victims to Victors, and we're looking for...
I think she froze. What she was saying is that we're looking for people to come alongside us. And so anyone who's interested in eradicating human trafficking, we've been passionate about for a long time, we welcome them reaching out to us at v@valleyvictoria.com. But we think if we work together and we collaborate within the industry, that this is something that we can go after.
I love that.
I just want to say I love that too, because I'm in the process of working with Sharon Sire and Nicole Glenn on doing a nonprofit charity for human trafficking in Texas specifically. So maybe we all need to get on a chat together and talk about that, because I agree with you. A lot of that lies within the supply chain and what's going on. Going back to your question, the future focused terminal, I think the ladies hit it well, though, but it is about more efficiencies in eliminating those charges and doing better for our customers. I think, as you know, Shauna, that's something that we're always fighting against that, because at the end of the day, if it's not the customers paying those charges, it's us. And we are trying to help the customers at the end of the day. That's what it's all about, having those solutions at the best cost possible, because to Megan's point, and it really goes down the chain to everyone. Now with inflation, all that has been, you know, I think came due to like the COVID situation, years of all this increased prices and just flowing down the chain now. And it just seems like you can never get a break from all of this. And I think at the end of the day, companies like us and the carriers, like all of us collectively want to do a better job, but we definitely need more help within those terminals and how can we get the trains in there, you know, and the containers, you know, more consistency. And you know how that all works. It's mm-hmm. it's complex, but I think if we're all working on it together, we can definitely improve it.
Yep. And ConGlobal has some initiatives around that too, with some of our logistics park visibility, but we're able to reduce some of those demurrage charges and things like that as well. So, but Bonnie, future focus so, terminal.
great conversation. And we are well partnered when it comes to truckers against trafficking, right? So we're certainly, UPS is well aligned with that. But when I think about future focused terminal, I think about a few things. First off, you got to have a really healthy railroad network, right, that has a consistent, reliable service on the trains, number one, because otherwise you get congestion and compression in the terminals, right? But then I think about things that enable that efficiency and automation to the degree that you can have an automated gate where it makes sense, where you got a rolling no touch for the drivers and no queue on the in and on the out, updated yard inventories for containers, trailers, chassis, all of those kinds of things. At the end of the day, it's about transparency of what is going on, where the assets are, and integrating that capability along with all the partnered customers of the rails, whether it's IMCs, draymen, carriers, you know, parcel, you name it. It's all of us, right? And I'm not just talking about railroad gate apps, right? I'm talking about truly integrating within a carrier's TMS so that mm-hmm. you can integrate into a workflow for the driver and make it simple and painless to go in and out of the terminal. And then you've got to include a continual feedback loop, right? So continual improvement allows the drivers, if you're more integrated, that you can give feedback about what's going on. So when the driver puts the unit in the wrong place, automatic geo locates to the right, you know, position and updates the yard inventory. Those kinds of things matter for the next one that comes along that needs to pick up, whether it's the shifter that needs to go trackside or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. We think about all of that, right? But I think about well-managed gates and fluid terminals, and how does technology provide integration and transparency to all of that data so that everyone can play a part and eliminate the inefficiencies.
Thank you all for joining me on the Future Focus podcast today. It's been really fun. And for our listeners out there, I hope you all will subscribe on your favorite listening platform. Have a great day, and until next time, take care.